This is another episode of Dear Analyst. And in this episode, I'm super excited to have David Yakubovich to speak on this episode. He is currently a senior manager of technical enablement at Single Store, and he's also a general partner at Data Power Ventures. And the reason why I'm super excited to have David speak today is because he comes from the other side of the data world, more as a kind of a startup investor, and he'll talk to us more about that. So David, thank you so much for being on the show.
Al, thanks so much for having me.
To kick things off, do you want to introduce yourself, your professional career to the audience?
Yeah, so I'm really excited that you're having me on the show because my whole background and career has been about all things data. And originally in college, I studied actuarial science, finance, and information systems. My first job was doing loss experience monitor ratio for an actuary firm called Aflac. And this is when I was working on IBM mainframes with COBOL and Fortran and was hearing about the thing called the cloud and started picking up some of those skills, working on Bloomberg terminals, working with what's become known as the modern data stack at that time, which was Qlik and Crystal Reports and working with SQL. And over the first half of my career, I was working for different big finance companies, building data dashboards in other tools like Tableau and Power BI, as well as working adjacent to the data science teams, ultimately to help ensure KPIs and OKRs and metrics were being tracked. And well, now a little over 7 years ago, moved up to New York City. Got involved in the startup ecosystem where I ran scaled training and technical enablement at two of the open source software bootcamp providers, including General Assembly and Galvanize, where I was scaling for enterprise. How can you take thousands of people and retrain them from working with Microsoft Excel and finance products and work in Python and R and the new modern data stack for programming? And that led me about 2 years ago to join Single Store, which is a database, a modern database for the modern data stack to help actually solve for data intensive applications, building all things around like a hybrid transaction and analytical processing. And so I joined Single Store to help scale the enablement efforts. A little bit of the background on Single Store is that originally Single Store was Y Combinator batch number 2. Back in 2011. And I joined Single Store pretty late on at Series D in 2020 and have been there as an operator, scaling them the last couple of years in all things technical enablement for our partners, clients, and employees. And those include things like how do you work with the database if you're a developer, if you're a data scientist or ML engineer, what does that look like as well to use our product with your current stack like Power BI or Tableau or Fivetran or DBT? And if you're someone who is looking to just improve your tech stack, how do you consolidate databases or how do you scale out to have real-time insights? And so that's been my day-by-day role. And beyond that, I also am a podcaster. I got an AI data science podcast called Humane. I run tech dinners in New York City, SF Seattle, and love to invest in all things data. So I run Data Power Ventures, which is a firm that invests in applied AI, data science, ML, and deep tech startups. So always keeping very busy.
Yeah, that sounds like four or five full-time jobs when I hear you say it. Before we get into some of the different companies that you look at Data Power Ventures, one thing that jumped out about from your experience was the data stack. And you mentioned how back in the quote unquote the day, the data stack was Qlik, Crystal Reports, SQL. I'm curious from your side of perspective, how has the data stack evolved, changed from when you first started working data to today?
So part of the stack has remained the same in the sense that Excel is going nowhere because now Excel is being augmented. We actually have a lot of new extensions today where you can integrate Salesforce and QuickBooks and Refinitiv and Bloomberg all directly into Excel, especially as it's gone to Office 365 on the cloud. So a lot of those tools that were often on-premise, they were offline tools, they weren't connected to the internet, are now smart. They're all being connected in real time. So those tools haven't gone away. They've evolved in one sense. I do think if you're a data analyst today who's building on what we call the modern data stack, there's such a variety of tools to help enable you in your workflow. I think one part of them actually is the database. So where does all your data live? And whether that's something like SingleStore or Snowflake or MongoDB or running on any of the hyperscaler systems on AWS, GCP, or Azure, that's part one. And making sure that your data is not siloed and you can access it. Then where the data stack truly comes in for data analyst is part two. You know where your data is, and now you want to get it and ETL it or ELT it, depending which tool you're working with. And so that's taking the different tables and schemas and bringing them into the tool where you're going to start doing that analysis. So is that going to be with DBT or Fivetran or Orkest or some of these new modern data stack tools? And then you're going to start doing some of that analysis. And that analysis may be no code, low code, as we're seeing with a lot of these like DAG tools that are helping you drag and drop and see instant results. Or is it going to still be with code? And so that new code stack we're seeing for data analysts today is working with notebooks. And those notebooks are traditionally from Jupyter Notebook and allows analysts to work with SQL as well as these new programming languages that, although data scientists work day in, day out with Python and R, we're seeing a lot of those expectations increase for data analysts to pick up those languages as well. And then that stack can integrate into visualization tools, which might be like the Tableaus, Power BIs, and Lookers of the world. And depending on the role, every company defines data analysts differently. So some companies like McKinsey look at data analyst as very strategic. You're working on projects and you're helping with client needs. And other companies like Lyft, the self-driving and real-time taxi hailing company, also look at a data analyst ultimately as someone who is actually playing the role of a data scientist. They're doing analysis in Python. They might not be doing the algorithms per se, but they are doing a lot of scripting and automation around ensuring that data flows are connected and that you're getting highly resilient and uniform data without much data skew.
That's super interesting. I think that's something that I hear about a lot from talking with folks is, you mentioned that the McKinsey version of data analyst is like you're strategic, you're supporting customers. And I think that's the way most people think about being a data analyst, which is I'm cranking out reports and doing Excel files for people internally or externally. But I like how you brought this distinction of different companies treat or see data analysts as accomplishing different goals within the organization. Mm.
Yeah, and I think in my early part of the career, when I was actually data analyst, so I went from actuary analyst at Aflac to financial control analyst at Citigroup, and then business intelligence analyst at Citi. So when I was doing BI at Citi, I was supporting the LATAM version of the business, and particularly it was all internal. It was internal reporting, it was creating these dashboards, providing these analytics to the executives so that they could make better, faster decisions with as much data points as possible. And so in that case, yes, I was still using APIs. I was using different connectors and different tools. And I think that distinction is important because if you're someone who's new to the data analyst world, you do want to decide like, what is it that gets you excited to build? Are you building to operate internal operations at a company? Or are you building to help external clients? Or do you want to actually build product? That's actually quite possible as well. And we've seen that hands-on at SingleStore, where we have a variety of customers who use our database as that starting point to actually build. And it includes a lot of personas. Some of those personas are application developers. Others are data analysts who want to have faster results. One of our tier one clients, in fact, is a leading supply chain company that uses products that perhaps you or I use to talk to others on a daily basis. So it's one of those three companies, and they have this big dashboard. It's called the Gold Dashboard, where all the data from supply chain must come into real time so that the executives can make decisions. And that means that there are a variety of data analysts who are working with different tools in their modern data stack to ensure that this dashboard's kept up with as much data, as much meaningful insights, so that decisions can be made without any issues.
Got it. Thanks for that background. I know you, before we get into some of the companies in your portfolio at Data Power Ventures, I kind of wanted to just ask you more about what drew you to the world of, I guess, startup investing, specifically in this big world of data. We hear about all these different startups, but you actually went into wanting to create your own venture fund. Can you talk more about like what went into your thinking in terms of like wanting to actually start a venture fund to invest in startups?
So when I moved to New York over 7 years ago, the first week I was here, I actually went to something called Founder Fridays, which is a community that connects founders. And yeah, so cool. So I was part of the OG with Wilton and Aaron and Kelsey and Norm and the whole crew there. And just love talking to founders, love talking to investors, seeing people like Jenny Feldman from Techstars and others come up and talk about what they're building, Sumit Shah, who's now at Clearco, and really just enjoyed all these stories. And I realized very early on that I was not only someone who had technical chops, but I also was in the community. And I would see a lot of interesting startups before they would raise, when they were just getting founded. And given my background in applied data, ML, and AI, I thought the next natural step was also investing. Like, let's get closer to operating and coaching startups from the ground up. I started doing that just a year into moving into New York City. And, you know, fast forward 5+ years of that, I started seeing some markups on these companies and started seeing their growth and was excited to coach from the sidelines, but wanted to get even deeper hands-on. And that's what encouraged me to launch my own venture firm, both as a syndicate and now an emerging fund practice, Data Power Ventures, where now we take a sizable ownership in companies from accelerator stage all the way to Series A. And that means our average check size ranges from $100,000 to $250,000. And our goal is not just to provide capital to companies, but also to help them with different parts of the modern data stack. When you're thinking about architecture and tools and how you're going to scale pipelines and your data systems, that's something that our network of experts and the community-driven effect can offer for founders. And beyond that, it's also, of course, hiring and talent, which is one of the biggest wars that we're seeing today in the tech industry. It's that no one can hire enough data analysts and data scientists because between the boot camps and schools, no one can learn fast enough. It's just every company needs technical expertise. And so having that on-demand network, either through agency or through ex-entrepreneurs who sold their companies or who currently work as data operators in the space, has been valuable for our portfolio of companies. And today, Data Power Ventures supports over 30 portfolio companies across the applied data ML AI stack. And almost half of our portfolio is actually based out of New York City. So we're very focused on building homegrown companies in what I believe is the center of tech in the whole universe, the great state of New York and the five boroughs here. But we also have portfolio companies in San Francisco, in Silicon Valley, in Seattle, in Austin, Denver, Boulder, and Raleigh. So we're pretty much focused on the United States, and any company that's building in data ML AI, we'd love to talk to them.
Yeah, for sure. And if you are out there working on a company, feel free to get in touch with David through LinkedIn or other channels. Let's get into some of the companies now. Let's first focus on one company that you brought up called Open Access. Tell us about this company, what makes them special, and how are they tackling problems in the data space?
Yeah, so I'm a really big fan of Open Access. The founder, Alex Damiano, has worked in the data industry at multiple companies previously, and then decided to found Open Access because of a problem that he saw, which was that visualizations are very challenging to make for data analysts. And so specifically what I mean by that is when you use tools like Tableau, Power BI, or Looker, you have to create these visualizations from scratch. And well, what if there was a way to make more repeatable visualizations and to share them among organizations? So Alex's goal was to create a company where you could have any data set and import that data set into a platform where a pre-existing visualization exists and connect the two together. And just like that, you got a visualization for your data set. So think of them as a no-code data visualization platform that's also offering this forking feature you see on GitHub to any visualization with any data set. And they've also added features like a Reddit-style feature where you can upvote data sets and upvote visualizations. So you can find which ones are more popular. Think of Tableau's visualization of the day. So they're bringing a lot of those best practices together. Couldn't be more excited to back Alex and the team. You know, they are also backed by the founder of Kaggle, so definitely got some hard hitters in that space there. And they're still just exiting private beta. They're based out of New York City. The product is, if you've seen some of their visualizations, a lot of the top newsletters out there on Substack are using Open Access's visualizations today, because a lot of these technical writers are not pros at using Tableau and Power BI, so they want great visualizations that you'd often see written traditionally in languages like D3 or Plotly that you'll see in the Wall Street Journal or the Times, but to do that without the code. So pretty excited for them. We backed them at the pre-seed, and they're going a little bit more open now. So stay tuned to see more of their visualizations.
Very cool. I guess one follow-up question I had on kind of the target audience for this product, is it for someone who doesn't necessarily play with data visualizations all day, doesn't know how to create charts in Excel or Tableau or Looker, and is someone who is a little more, like you said, like writing a newsletter and they just want to quickly be able to throw up a visualization? Is it for someone like that who doesn't have that much hands-on experience with these data visualization tools?
So what the Open Access team is doing is two things. Number one, if you're someone who doesn't code in day in and day out, or you're not someone who uses those vis tools, this makes it easy for you. You can take those other pre-built visualizations, take them to your data set, get something great. Also, you can attribute any of the visualizations on the platform to the research and work that you're doing already, without having to pay the royalties that you typically see going with the AP and Getty. So there's a lot of benefits there in the media space. However, the platform is being designed that there is a variety of ways to create those visualizations. So they have their own creator tool similar to Tableau. But in addition to that, there is some programming. So you could actually, if you are someone who programs in Python or R, you could also like go behind the scenes. And I think that's one of the big changes we've seen in the industry in the last few years is the splintering of data analytics and data science, where creators can actually not just decide they want to work with code, but they can also work with no code. And it's our goal as founders, like Alex at Open Access, is to provide those options and not say this is what we think the market should go towards, but this is what the market's telling us, and that's the splintering. And I think that effect of going towards generally all-purpose, no-code data visualizations is all about the technical talent bottleneck. It's not just a pipeline problem, but it is, technology is changing so fast. And if we think about the data analyst stack just 5 years ago, Python didn't really have good data visualizations. Everyone was still building an R. And then Plotly came up about a few years ago, and that has been, you know, a whole slew of new packages and new programs coming out there. So it's really just enabling anyone to create good visualizations, just like you would see in the journal or the Times, without you having to have a full-time team of a few data analysts building nonstop dashboards for the executives.
Very cool. And I'll definitely be including links to Open Access in the show notes. Moving on to another portfolio company, Nomad Data, and how they can augment data sets. Can you tell us more about this company you're backing and also what problem they're solving in this space?
Yeah, so I'm a big fan of Brad Schneider, who launched Nomad Data, and we also featured him on the Humane podcast. So if you ever want to dive deep and get a 45-minute soundbite on everything that he's doing and building with the team, be sure to check that out. We could share in the show notes. But Nomad Data specifically, what I liked about Brad is he's a serial entrepreneur, sold his previous company working with enterprise data and analytics. And one of the issues he realized is the biggest issue about building data pipelines and the entire data workflow is having the right data and having better data and getting that faster early on. And so what Brad's built with his team is a platform that anonymously connects buyers and sellers of data sets. Think of like the Snowflake data marketplace, but for anyone. And so Nomad Data today has over 1,000 providers of different relevant data sources that whether you're a startup, a scale up, or an enterprise company, you can go on, find really interesting data requests, get access to it, and purchase it with a license so you can get access to proprietary data. Because the challenge we've seen in building out great dashboards and as well as going into machine learning is having enough relevant data points. And building a data set from scratch can often take a long time, and often that data may not exist. So it makes sense that if there's already cutting edge data sets out there, why not get access to them in an appropriate and licensing capacity? And so that's what Nomad Data has been focused on. They're also based out of New York City. And so today they've been working with some of the leading enterprise companies out there, from quant funds and finance shops, to help them ensure they get the right data to get better results and insights on whatever dashboards or ML products they're working on.
Very cool. I feel like I heard of this company on the Pomp podcast. Are you familiar with the podcast with Anthony Pompliano? It's all about like crypto and Bitcoin and stuff.
Yeah. So Anthony's pretty cool. And I actually did not listen to that episode, but love to hear how that one was.
Yeah. Yeah. I could. I mean, again, this is like me kind of picking up a memory from my brain. And I remember the problem. It could be the same company or a different company, but it was all about how when you're an analyst working within a hedge fund or a quant shop, you're normally tasked with finding, you know, what are the prices of wheat or grain for the last, like, you know, 5 years or something like that. And you're constantly digging through all these data sources. And this company, I'm thinking it was the same company, they were talking about how they created this repository of all these rich data sets that analysts would typically need to scrounge for and pay thousands of dollars for to back a certain thesis for investing in something or some trend. Am I kind of getting that right in terms of like the target audience and the use cases for these different data sets?
Yeah, there's a variety of audiences you could look at when you think of customer segmentation. So one could absolutely be like the traditional quant shops, the traders, you know, people who work in fintech, who are trying to create more holistic, enriched data sets for the analysis that they're looking to do on making price action decisions on market trading. So there's definitely a core thesis there with the financial sector. Though beyond that, it's ultimately about building out holistic profiles and lookalike campaigns. When you're thinking about building in e-commerce, when you're thinking about building in transit, when you're thinking about building in health tech, any of these fields, there's so much data points that don't exist. We often have what we talk about in the database market is sparse data sets. And this is also akin to machine learning, where let's say you have a table that's 500 columns by 5 billion records. Well, it doesn't mean that every single column and every single record has data. Often it's sparse, it's missing, it's empty. And that creates a lot of issues when you're doing data analysis and when you're doing machine learning, because you have to figure out what to do with the empty data. You have to fill it, you got to remove it, or you got to approximate it. That's often the three strategies that are taken. And so the benefit of a platform like Nomad Data is they're there to help you fill that data, to get a better representation, to create more uniform distribution so that your analysis is more precise and ultimately you can make better, faster decisions.
And does it use kind of other parts of that 500 column, 5 billion record table as indicators for how to fill in that data, or does it tap into other data sources to fill in data? I'm curious how that technology works behind the scenes, if you can speak to that.
Yeah, so the Nomad Data team's continuing to build out the product, and today they do have some AI-powered features that are getting a holistic view of your data set based on sector, based on industry, based on some lookalike features, so that there could be some smart recommendations. So there's a bit of that. There's a bit of also human augmented, which I think is always important with data sets. So you could actually get curation where a data expert can partner with your firm and ensure they can provide recommendations as well when you're considering those different data sets. I think ultimately what I see Nomad Data doing is akin to a very interesting startup that I met the founders out of Tel Aviv called Explorium. So Explorium is taking a different approach, but there's definitely space to play for multiple companies. And so Explorium AI is about doing data enrichment. So in their case, you actually import your data into the platform, and then the platform does some smart analysis and says, oh, you should, you know, buy data set one or data set two. The goal with Nomad Data is saying, look, we are your trusted advisors in the sense that we want to offer you every type of data possible that's going to be high quality enrichment for you to get better results with your data products. But we want to be good stewards, and we never want to touch your data. So they stay away from that and just offer these recommendations. And then the entire marketplace for purchasing, consuming, and licensing the alternative data sets.
Got it. And could you speak to maybe like which industries or use cases have been the most sticky with Nomad Data's technology?
So today they've had a lot of progress in media buying. So there's a lot of these like lookalike profiles when you're looking at providing different media engagements with advertising in real time, and you need additional data to understand more about clients, to understand about different users. And so the media industry in New York's been quite a big purchaser of these alternative data sets. We've seen also consulting. So like I mentioned earlier, companies like McKinsey, who might be needing to have data for their clients to be successful, then they could augment those projects with these alternative data sets. So we're seeing a lot of consultants early on purchase and license. We see in the finance space, mostly around banking, asset management. So this could be the private wealth, the hedge funds, the quant shops, who are always wanting to be in the best possible position and get the best possible edge. And that competitive edge could be your model or system is 0.1% more precise than the competitor. Or by instead of having 500 columns of data as described in the scenario above, maybe you want to have 5,000 columns, because having all these other data points can give you that much more nuance and signal to make a decision that without that, you might lose out to someone else in the market. So we see a lot in the traditional finance sector and the alternative data buyers, which traditionally is like quant and finance as the core buy-in. But there has been those expansion to, as mentioned, like the media, the consulting, and other industries as well.
Gotcha. Yeah, the lookalike profiles seems like a very sticky use case, since everyone's trying to find new customers or new target segments to expand their footprints in. So, and we also know, like, I also know, like, you know, lookalike profiles are very, very popular on Facebook advertising too. So I can only see this space getting bigger for the team over there. I guess kind of to wrap things up a little bit, one reason I was super excited to have you on is because you're providing a different perspective on the data space, and you're approaching this again as a startup investor. And I'm curious what your team looks for specifically in data startups before you decide to, back them and support them.
Yeah. So at Data Power, we focus on applied AI data ML startups, and the products focus on five core thematics. So data intensive apps, human augmented workflows, real-time insights, data developer tools, and data software automation. So if you're building in one of those five thematics, which could be across any industry, whether that's health tech, fintech, web 3.0, or even deep tech, we're happy to take a look and see what you and your team are building. It's also important that at least one of the founders are technical. I think it's really the best startups that we backed. One of the founders are, ex-data scientists, data engineers, ML engineers in the space, which really helps in building out product. I think also it's about looking at the market. So there's often a solution that can be commercially viable. At Data Power, we don't invest in an algorithm for the sake of this algorithm is going to give a 0.1% lift over another technique, but that these are companies that are applied companies. So they're using the data ML or AI technologies, becoming data ML or AI powered, so to speak, to build a commercially viable business. And that means going after $10 billion plus TAMs, or going after products that ultimately can reach, you know, 1 million ARR within 3 years of business founding. We go across all different stages, though. We've invested in multiple companies at the accelerator stage and followed on at the pre-seed, seed, and seed extension stage. Companies today can be remote and distributed. So even though I mentioned at the onset that almost half of our portfolio is based in New York City, it doesn't mean that all the employees are based in New York City. I think today, great founders are willing to hire from abroad. And that means all distributed throughout, for example, the United States and across multiple time zones and nationalities at different countries. So we see that today with a lot of our companies as well. And what we also see with founders that we back is that they're relentlessly curious. They're talking to a lot of design partners early on. They're constantly iterating. One of the classic conversations we see with startups that founders don't like to talk about, but they should, is about pivoting. And to think like, oh gosh, a pivot happens once or twice and you're done. But I really think of pivoting as a million iterations, and there's small microbursts of changes in the product and changes in the stack. And being willing to be nimble and agile is at the hallmark of what good founders are doing. I think something else that we see that's really good in founders that we back is that, well, they're shipping product frequently. And the product doesn't have to be perfect. It's always changing. So some of our founders that we back ship updates every single week and then test it out with their pilots, with their POCs, and those design partners to then further expand it out and roll it out to all the customers. Products today also, I think if you're looking to build a startup in the modern data stack, it has to be cloud first. Although there are companies that like on-premise and like solutions that are available in a certain air-gapped secure market, today every product's cloud first. And you have to integrate with different cloud tools and be willing to meet your customers where they work. Often customers don't want to change their habits. If they're running on an AWS stack, and you say, oh, well, we're available on GCP. They're going to be like, all right, well, let us know when you're available on AWS. So it's following their stack. So I think there's a variety of factors we look at in founders that are just really excited to build for this industry. I think akin to the last 20 years being where everyone was building software companies to build software platforms and software plays at the infrastructure and developer tool layers. Now, the next 20 years are going to be focused on the data, ML, and AI stack. I think we're going to be in a place in 20 years where everything in our consumer perspective and enterprise perspective will be tracked in an ethical way, responsibly. That's why we backed the industry's first data pledge, where founders, operators, and VCs can all commit to building in public for responsible data systems. And by building in public, then when we move into this world of, let's say, 2050, where it is a minority report style world, all the data will be properly collected, properly analyzed, and ethically supported so that all the hardware and software that we're working with is being able to improve society and improve that both from the enterprise and consumer perspective. I think it's also worth noting that this world that I'm painting, so call it Minority Report or Ready Player One, that we're moving towards, whether you call it the metaverse or not, there is data everywhere. And all that's going to be need to be stored in databases. It's going to need data analysts to measure and quantify impact. And there's going to be systems that are going to recommend and make real-time insight results. And that's what we're excited about. We're excited about where the world's going to look like in the next 3 decades. And that's why Data Power Ventures, even in today's economic climate, is continuing to invest in 2 or 3 new portfolio companies every single month.
I love this prognosis for the future. And I think for the data analysts, data scientists, and data engineers who are listening, I think it also kind of guarantees their jobs for the hopefully next 15, 20 years as well. One final follow-up question, and it's a little bit of a tricky one, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts, is from your perspective as an investor, what type of things keep you up at night when a company, for the company, like reaches out to you and says, hey, we need help with this, we're facing a problem? What are some of those things that really kind of keep you up at night when a portfolio company reaches out to you?
So my number one goal with all of our active portfolio companies is to help them problem solve. And whether that's through myself or our network-driven or community-driven approach, I think those are instrumentally valuable. So today we're a network of over 1,000 investors and operators. So when you're being backed by Data Power Ventures, it's not just being backed by myself, but it's our whole team. And our whole team, as investors, want you to be successful. And so what I tell founders is that when you get backed by investors, whether they're syndicates or funds or angels, every investor wants you to be successful, not only just from like the business perspective, but also to help build and scale as coaches and advocates. And so I encourage all of our portfolio companies to, on a monthly basis, share with us, what are you working on? What are your troubles? What are you trying to solve for? Because then we can all roll up our sleeves and say, oh, I know this person in my network, or, oh, I know this technique that worked for another company, and let's help you be successful with that. One example right now is one of our portcos is raising a venture debt round. And they said, hey, we're looking for certain intros in the space because this will be really impactful for us to help manage our margins so we can grow quicker, onboard new accounts, and further scale and hire more talent. And so to do that, I said, okay, let's reach out to the network. And in 24 hours, we had 8 different venture debt providers reaching out to the portco. And now they're working on finalizing what those options will look like so that they can further grow faster, scale better, and of course, in a climate like today, ensure that they're being the most prudent with all of their venture capital and venture debt dollars.
I love that. It's great to hear that it's a huge network of operators that people that are in the fold can really count on and work with. David, I know we're wrapping up close to time here. Anything else you want to talk about or mention about Data Power Ventures or anything at all regarding the data stack, as it were?
Yeah, so I'll just share that if you're looking for an exciting database that's in the modern data stack that can do both transaction analytics, be sure to check out SingleStore. We'll add it to the show notes. It's singlestore.com/managed-service-trial. We can give you $500 of free credits to try out the database. And at Data Power, we are constantly investing through all economic conditions. So if you're building in the space and you're excited to launch a data powered company, be sure to check us out at datapower.vc. We do have an intake form where we can learn more about you. And if you're in New York, of course, glad to meet up for coffee or a drink, talk about data in person. I always love talking data. I think that's one of my favorite things to do.
And I think that was a perfect use for this podcast as well. David, thank you so much for being on the show and have a great rest of your day.
Excellent. Al, thanks so much for bringing me on.